Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, you're listening to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, a podcast for guitar lovers. This week, we're going to be discussing a mailbag full of gear that you just need to check out. But if you want to hear more from us four and support the Guitar Nerds whilst you're doing it, then head on over to patreon.com/guitar nerds and enjoy not only a weekly Patreon special, but the Hall of Fame podcast as well. Have it all, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello, everybody.
Jay Cross.
Hi, everyone.
And Matthew Knight.
Good evening.
Yes, that's right. It's another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. What are we on? Episode 206? 206.
Something like that.
Although...
Blink 206.
Yeah, Blink 206.
Oh, when we did episode 182, why didn't we do a Blink 182 special?
We did.
Did we?
No, we did. Episode is called Nothing to Do with Blink 182.
Right.
I know this because I had to go back through...
182.
182.
Blink 182.
That is the actual way that it's said officially.
Written.
Yep. And pronounce. But yeah, I do know this because I had to go back through all 205 episodes after Apple announced a change in the way that podcasts had to be titled.
You can't have the number in the title anymore.
You can't have the episode number in the title anymore. So listener, be aware that you won't be able to tell what number anymore. But also be aware that that took nearly my whole day.
Yeah, he got paid for that. He literally got paid to sit and delete some numbers. Useless.
Hey, I was deleting numbers and adding the numbers to the meta description. There were two levels to that job role. But yes, it is another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. There's virtually no news this week. This is a dry period.
There's a new bass. I'm surprised you didn't mention the new bass.
Well, there is some news. There was obviously a news section.
I thought you'd be into the bass. It's actually on the list.
Yes, it's in the news list. Yeah. It's good to see that you're reading the documentation.
Joe, if I'm paying you, I'll read whatever I want.
Yeah, that's... fair enough. Okay, well... Anyway,
I'm just looking forward to being Alan Sugar at some point. I'm just saying,
do the point.
What? You're firing Joe.
Yes, as directors, we've all come together, Joe. And firstly, this is an intervention, and secondly, you're fired.
This week, Lord Sugar has decided to get the contestants to launch a podcast. As you can see, it's not gone very well.
I sort of got reminded of an old episode of The Apprentice where some guy pitches his CV and he's like, his CV's really good. And then his business plan is just pictures of sailboats. And he's just like, you've given me sailboats. And he's like, well, you know, it's an idea. He's just like, get out. I can see that happening. Joe, pitch us what you've been doing. I've drawn some sailboats.
This maybe is a Patreon topic, but what reality TV series do you think Joe stands the best chance of winning? I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Is there a run where you sort of just run into walls with your head?
Yeah. Oh, well, Bring on the Wall. What was that show called?
Oh, yeah, that is the show that Joe
in. Is that called The Wall?
No, where the wall comes down the thing and you've got to like make the shape to go through it. That is the TV show. That
What was that Channel 5
Fort
show Boyard? On a castle?
Yes, Fort Boyard.
Yeah, Fort Boyard.
I don't know what that was.
Oh, Fort Boyard was amazing.
With Dirty Den as the evil guy.
And
Fort Boyard.
Melanie...
Melinda Messenger.
That was it, yeah.
Melanie C.
All I'm saying is, if anyone wants to sponsor us to go and do that Crystal Maze experience, and we'll take some cameras.
We should take some Patreon money and go and do that.
I'm quite up for that. I definitely think that's a worthwhile.
I also our Christmas party. I mean, we didn't get a real one.
If we can't do that, I do know someone who owns and runs an escape room, so we could.
Can we put Joe in it and then
just by himself. We're going to take it in turns, mate. Just lock him in there and go to the pub without
I would
him.
Be concerned about ever making it out of escape room. I don't really feel it's my strong suit.
We should do that, though. If someone wants to... if anyone listening has any connections to the people that currently run the Crystal Maze experience thing...
I spoke to the fella on the phone when he wanted to buy an acoustic.
Richard Iode?
No, the
Richard
other guy.
O'Brien.
Richard O'Brien.
Yeah, I don't think he's involved in it, mate.
No, I know, but he was good when he was involved.
But there is a current Crystal Maze thing, and if anyone listening does have a hookup with that, it would be great if we could go in and do it and do some filming. I think that would be awesome.
The only other thing that I think Joe would be fantastic at is what's that one where you have to like run around on the inflatables and there's like
total wipeout.
I reckon Joe on that would be fantastic.
Is that the American one where they're on big inflatable things?
Yeah, exactly, but
there's a British one as well, which is very similar, except it's small inflatables.
They're actually shot in the same. They're both shot in Argentina.
Oh,
believe
really?
It or not.
Yeah,
no,
right.
Not the British one. Yeah, no, it's filmed in like Stoke-on-Trent or something.
They're not. It's the same. They're filmed in Argentina.
Rubbish.
Anyway, this week,
don't cry for me.
This week, me and Mark went to the GAC
went home
vault launch event.
You just went to work.
Well, I don't really work there anymore, but yes.
And also, it's what used to be the base department, so yeah, also so you kind of went to work.
Well, sure, yeah.
So what we did, what GAC have done is they've changed...
Taking the idea that me and Jay had about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Here we go. don't give Joe any credit for this, Matty.
No, I actually opposed this idea. The reason that it's only happened after I left is because I was so adamantly against the base department losing any space. So if you're not aware of how the GAC shop works, the base department is a whole separate like three-room area at the back of the shop. It's wonderful because it's probably the biggest base department in the UK. Because of that, I know that probably doesn't, you know, it's
not saying much.
It's not saying much, really. But it was nice having those three rooms. And anyway, absolutely rightly, I was wrong to oppose it. We've moved the bases into the main part of the shop, you know, because who buys a base? And they've moved the bases into the main part of the shop. And now the those three rooms have become what they've called the GAC Vault, which is a room full of all the super cool custom shop and. Like vintage gear and boutique gear. So it's a room full of all of that stuff. And they were having a launch night with Ariel Posen playing a couple of songs. And so me and Mark went down and checked it out. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was good.
There was some cool stuff there.
I didn't look at any guitars. I just talked to Ben from Gibson the entire evening.
You literally did just talk to one fella. I was there networking. You were there speaking, having a jolly with Ben from Gibson.
You were networking with customers that you already knew from the shop.
Yeah.
That's a lie, actually. I did play some guitars. I played some Eastman stuff.
You did? One of the Eastman... I always forget. Is it T460?
The one that looks like a 335,
yeah,
but with... like the custom version, so like the multiple ply binding and the like split block inlays and the ebony board, really good. I know in the past I've had my kind of doubts about Eastman stuff, but now I'm really into it. Now I've actually had some hands-on time with it. I'm super into it.
Yeah. Well, we said that the difference when we spoke about them like last week, the difference was that now they've started really focusing on these interesting finishes, these like hand rubbed.
Yeah.
Sort of through finishes.
I actually don't like those as much as I like the gloss finish.
Really?
Yeah,
it was a gloss one that you were trying.
Yeah.
But it's lovely. I love that they've got that rosewood cap on the headstock as well. There just seems to be so much attention to detail. And that guitar retails for like under £1,000 as well. And I swear, I know that like Gibson Memphis is the extreme top end of everything that Gibson do, and so the 335s are literally the best things that Gibson are making. But if you want a proper 335 from Gibson, you've got to spend $3,000 or more. And this is, you know, these Eastmans are lovely, super functional. Come with like Seymour Duncan. You get a 59 in the bridge, and it's a Seymour Duncan Jazz in the neck. They're really good, yeah. Really good.
Yeah, but I like it.
You spent a lot of time on that.
The only thing with it is, and I'm not saying anything disparaging at all about Eastman. What I'm about to say is, people, this is to do with kind of people's perception of brands and stuff. So I've got a friend at the moment who really wants a 335. Or, you know, a kind of similar hollow body. And I said, oh, I've just played these Eastmans. They're great. You know, they're built in China, but they're, you know, they're largely hand-built and they're impeccably finished and absolutely fantastic guitars. And he went, yeah, I just wanted to say Gibson on the headstock, though. So, so I think what he's going to buy is a guitar that actually goes for not a lot of money at all now, which is a 90s 335 Studio, which is a basically a 335 but with no F holes.
Right.
And
That sounds awesome.
It's routed through the back, so they cost a lot less initially, and you can pick one up now for about $1,000.
Right.
$900 to $1,000, something like that. And it's basically, you know, everything you'd expect from a studio. So it's like unbound neck and dots. But they're supposed to be very, very good. So he's going to go and have a look at one and give it a go.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. Yeah, but I still think these Eastmans are going to be wicked. What was the other thing there? There was a 1964 SG Junior.
Yeah,
really nice with a what do you call the trems?
Maestro. Maestro.
Is that the one that's listed in Polaris White?
Yes.
Really nice that.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah, really nice. Looks great. We thought that was Pucker. There's a bass six in there, like an old 63,
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, 63. It's listed for about £3,000 more than those instruments actually go for.
It's on commission.
It's
though,
a commission sale, so it's what the fella who owns it has asked for. It's just that person obviously has no idea how much.
Or they just don't really care that much. Because I've been visiting a lot of stores recently for reverb and just kind of getting the vibe on what that kind of, because at GAC we didn't used to do that many commission sales when I was there, and it seems like you do quite, you know, GAC does quite a lot now, but loads of other stores do them as well, and everything does seem to be higher priced. And when you talk to people about it, they're like, well, yeah, they're just basically, they don't want to store it at home, they don't mind if it doesn't sell right away because they don't need the money, so it's on the shelf for a bit more money, and if someone comes in and offers that, then great, if not, no one's losing out.
From my perspective, it's nice to be able to go in and play a 1963 bass six.
Yeah, it's really nice as well.
It's lovely. Yeah. Honestly, if it was up there for $5,000, I'd be thinking about what I could sell. But you know, at £8,000, it's really.
I can't believe
expensive.
That's the first thing you try though, Joe. Especially when there's a Firebird X.
There's a Firebird X.
What?
Someone saw it and bought it, like one of the purchasers saw it and thought it would be
is
a good investment.
A new one?
Yes, it is. It is a new one. So it was.
But,
it,
I mean, the one. Oh,
it
no.
must have been a clear
we,
out.
We didn't sell the one that we no, had I when
know.
I was at GAC.
It must have been a clear out from Gibson. I don't know, but there
no,
is.
No, no, it was from a. It was just from a customer.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, we bought it in.
I believe so. Yeah, yeah. That's
even better.
Yeah, that's from just speaking to a couple of people there. That's where it's come from.
Do you know what? And I did think maybe we should do this as a Patreon topic, or we should talk about it again at some point. But just like. People were like, oh, robot tuners, worst thing ever. And it's like, we worked in the store when there was like the Darkfire and the Dust Tiger. I mean, I remember the Dust Tiger had like programmable pickups that you plugged into a computer.
Yeah. I mean, the Firebird X is like, completely... Firebird X is completely bonkers. You know, it comes with that gig bag that's got two different pedals in it. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah. Two foot controllers that are like mega chunky that are Bluetooth controlled to the guitar.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It was the weirdest thing ever. And well, I don't think I ever demoed it in full to anyone.
Well, no. I was speaking to Joss in the store, and he was saying that someone had tried it out the other day and was playing it unplugged, and then had asked if they could plug it into an amp.
Like,
and he was like, yeah, I'll just go and get the pedal board so that you can do that. And they were obviously like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yes.
But what a ridiculous guitar.
What's this Mustang like that's in there? I'm just looking on the GAC website.
So there's an old Mustang in
65, 66. Now, it looks like the finish is washing away.
No, so the finish is... Yes. When we say it's been refinned, I mean someone has taken like a little pot of craft paint to it and painted it blue.
Imagine you're painting the outside of a houseboat.
Yeah, it's like that. Like, you can see the brush strokes in there. And it looks like they've just painted over the original finish because you can kind of see something else underneath.
That is what
it looks awful. Like, up close, I'm like, this is rubbish.
I think it's got some good vibe to it.
I'm sure it plays well. I just think it looks horrible.
Yeah, but...
And for that reason, I'm not happy. I'm not up for that £2,000 price mark.
And for that reason, you're fired.
Yeah. I think that guitar's quite cool. Yeah, I mean, would I spend that sort of money on it? No, but for someone who's after a Mustang with a bit of history that's got a bit of a kind of funky vibe to it, it's not a bad guitar.
No, it's pretty cool. But the coolest guitars we saw that night were, I thought, Ariel Posen's... guitars, his second one in particular. Did you see this? You were at the back chatting with Ben, right?
Yeah, I was just chatting, unfortunately. I didn't watch it.
So he was playing this cool sort of Collins sort of single cut, looks a bit like a Titan, that sort of single cut vibe, that sort of offset single
cut strange
vibe.
Pickups,
yeah, with strange pickups, and that sounded great. That was fine going through a Hampstead combo, and then halfway through he changed over to his Mule Posencaster.
Okay.
Which is a strat body shape, but it's as thick as an ES-175.
Okay.
It's steel and hollow.
I'm gonna look up a picture of this now.
And it's got like the neck is like all the neck and the border like a burnt maple, like a baked maple with like a Tele headstock, and it's in baritone tuning, but it's a standard scale.
Okay, I don't know anything about
this
brand.
He's got that strung up with 17s, if I remember rightly.
Something like that, because it's in baritone tuning, but it's standard strung. Oh my god, it sounded amazing, and he was just playing slide stuff on it, and I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. Like a thick, deep-bodied, you know, like steel strap. That's awesome. It's like that's the most cowboy thing I've ever heard. But it sounded great. It sounded absolutely wonderful. Made by a company called Mule. But yeah, really, 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 really cool guitar.
There is a photo on the Mule website with... The guy who I assume is the guy who makes Mule guitars. He's wearing a Mule cap.
Right.
And he appears to be in the... on-set trailer of Jason Momoa of Aquaman fame, because there's a picture of him,
Khal Drogo sharing
a hug with Khal Drogo himself, and I assume he's just given him this guitar that they're holding.
Oh, so, that's cool.
I honestly think we should push to get Jason Momoa on the podcast, because
did you see him play bass in that little video?
He seems like a cool dude, and he's got some wicked guitars.
Did you see the bass that he was playing? He has
sparkle.
He's got a gold, it's like a gold sparkle Thunderbird with the only pickup being like right in the bridge.
Yeah, which is where pickups are supposed to go.
Not on basses.
Absolutely on basses.
Right, Funky Jay.
That's the only issue with the P bass. Like, you know, the greatest instrument ever invented. But the problem is that
pickup's not on the bridge.
It just needs to be further down.
There's an old Vox. There's a Vox version of a P bass with the P bass pickup right up in the bridge that you can pick up for, you know, like a couple of hundred quid.
Yeah, pickup. That's the issue. That's what I said. Pickup.
Yeah, great. That's wonderful. But yeah, it was. The Posencaster was so cool. What a wicked guitar. Mule, I checked Mule because I'd never even heard of them.
Yeah,
I checked
them
out afterwards and I was like, oh, every guitar is awesome. They're like, it's Mule Resonator Guitars, I think is the full name for their website.
Yeah, it is, exactly that.
But yeah, oh, listener, go check them out. They are absolutely super duper awesome and cool.
Can I just say there's a picture on the internet that I've stumbled across
on the internet
of Jason Momoa, and he's playing what's clearly early 60s P bass. It's but the article I think is called "How Jason Momoa Got Ripped for Aquaman," and it's just two shots of him being a dude. So on the right hand side, he is playing what is clearly an old P bass and loving it, and on the left hand side, he's just doing a bit of rock climbing. He's basically got my interests, but a much He's just a better man than me, you know.
You know, I've been obviously I've been kitting out the new Guitar Nerd studio, video studio, and I've been thinking of some artwork to have on the wall behind me.
Just have this picture of Jason Momoa.
I might just get some posters of Momoa. Just some posters like Momoa flexing. I think that's what I'm gonna.
There's a lot of pictures of him playing guitar on the internet. So
Guitar or flexing. Either one. So in other news, very soon on the Guitar Nerds podcast, we're going to release this as a special, and there is going to be some interaction from our audience.
Sorry?
Some interaction.
Okay.
From the.
a bit weird.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, wasn't it? Yeah, from our listeners. But we are going to be building. On the podcast, we're going to be building a Balaguer.
I didn't know anything about this.
Didn't you?
No.
Did I not tell you?
Yeah, you say a lot of things to me. Whether I listen to them, that's another matter.
Okay, fine. So what we're going to do, we've still got to arrange a date, and we're talking to Joe Balaguer as well. So we're going to sorting out a date with Joe Balaguer.
Where are you going out for dinner?
Yes. But we're arranging for... The idea is we're going to do a podcast where the four of us are going to co-design a Balaguer on the podcast. And then we're going to select a handful of features that are down to listener votes.
Okay.
Which we're going to interesting allow on the Facebook group, and then after that, because obviously that will take us over, you know, a podcast episode for those editions. So then we'll announce what the finished article is going to be, and Joe's going to build that for us and send it over.
And then are we giving it away or something?
No. It's just going on the wall.
It's going to go on the wall next to the pictures of Jason Momoa flexing.
Okay, yeah. Nice.
Exactly. So,
finish is going to be a picture of Jason Momoa.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. But yeah, we're going to be arranging the time for that. But listener, get ready. And, you know, we haven't decided what things we're going to let you guys choose. It's probably going to be like stuff like, I don't know, whether there's a pickup ring or, the colour of the binding.
What gauge strings?
Something like
all
that.
All the big choices.
Yeah, all the big choices. But, you know, but nonetheless, you get to be involved. You get to be a part of the Guitar Nerds Balaguer.
I've got a suggestion. Can the listeners, because I reckon really there's only four main votes that need to happen in a neck, in a guitar. And I reckon those four votes should come down to Mark, me, Matt, and the audience.
I agree.
And I don't think anybody else needs to be involved. You're just the host. Who's going to host?
Well, I think if
who's going to do the hosting here, like, you know.
What we should do is that's absolutely
saying
right.
Saying that we need to have you guys, pickups in the neck and stuff.
No, it's
ridiculous
fine.
Ridiculous things like
it's
that.
Fine. You guys can argue out sort of the what goes where. I think that's a great idea. And then all that will happen is at the end, I can go through and I'll be able to veto anything that's not the right choice and obviously replace it. But otherwise, the decisions will all be yours. But yes, that's going to be fun. So that's yet to come.
Just another way that we could do this,
right?
Is, you know, they've got the online guitar builder.
Yeah,
we could get people to submit, and then we pick the best one.
No, that's not happening. Listeners, it's going to be a co-op build.
So, well, like, we choose some stuff, and they choose some stuff.
That's the thing. We're doing a podcast building the guitar.
Fine.
If we have people submit, there's no podcast.
Yeah, we're not in the...
Yeah, exactly.
We're not needed.
I think we're less likely to be able to get this guitar if we don't do a podcast about this guitar.
I'm going
to
go through and find the body shape that's going to be most irritating to you specifically.
That's not going to be the case. Anyway, start thinking about it, because that will happen sometime in the next month, I'm sure. Now, Matt Knight.
Yes.
You bought my dream pedal board.
I did. We actually did talk about this on a podcast some moons ago. I can't remember when. But we were talking about... Hold on, I'm just going to grab it.
What are you grabbing, Matt?
I'm grabbing the Korg PME 40X Professional Modular Effects Pedal Board. The most ridiculous thing ever made. It's...
Sorry, can you say the name again, please?
PME 40X.
Wonderful.
Professional modular pedal board or effects. It's, basically a docking station for Korg effects modules
right.
from the 80s, such as the KOD 101. and the KDD501.
These look the absolute bomb as well. They're part of that cool sort of, like, a few brands did, like Yamaha did one that looked really similar.
And Ibanez obviously have their kind of like 70s, 80s multi effects, which is just all their pedals put in one box.
Yeah.
It's obviously not modular, but it's got kind of similar.
No, but those modular ones, they came out. Do you remember? We spoke about it on the podcast, didn't we? They were
Nexi.
Yeah. No, not Nexi. We were speaking about the old ones because I was looking at trying to get one of the other ones. But they go for loads of money. How did you get a Korg one so affordably?
I know. £50 I paid for this one. And actually, the modules themselves usually go for £50. So I was quite pleased I actually bought that. I got it and was like, this better be terrible because I really should sell it. And I plugged it in. It sounded amazing, so I've kept it. It's got an overdrive module in it, the digital delay, and a chorus, analog chorus as well, actually.
Ooh.
The digital delay sounds wicked. It's got like a high cut control. You can do some really weird, like glitchy stuff, and some sort of like hold modes where you just press a chord and it will just go round and round forever, and you can shift the time and stuff, which is quite cool. And then the chorus is really nice. It's just a really rich analog chorus. You can run it in stereo if you want. And I was like, oh, I really want some other modules. Can't get them. Can't find them. No one is selling any modules anywhere.
Well, there you are, listener. If you have an old Korg module for the PME.
Excuse me.
Then let Matthew know.
Well, the one to find is the Korg Octave 5. If anyone can find a Korg Octave 5, please let me know. In fact, is there one? Is there one on Reverb? There probably isn't one on Reverb.
Oh.
But it's basically a 12-band EQ that one side does various octaves and then the other side does a distortion on a per octave. So you've got two down, one and a half down, one down, normal, one octave up, and then level. And you can add distortion to any one of those octaves, and then there's an inbuilt noise gate.
Wow.
I want it, so please someone find it. And
okay.
Then give it and gift it to me. But yeah, it's actually a really, really cool unit. So I'm definitely going to look out for some more modules. I found a list of all the modules that you can actually get for it. And
how many modules are there in total?
I think there's about 12.
Oh, that's okay.
It was a super successful unit at the time. So,
what a weird thing to.
It's very weird, but actually, yeah, it sounded surprisingly good. So I have to bring it down, and we'll shoot some videos on it at some point, or we'll do something on Instagram.
100%. That sounds super cool. Now that leads us on to the section of the podcast that we fondly refer to as
mailbag.
That's right.
It's
mailbag time.
Why did you just stop?
I didn't stop. There was the jingle there. Jay, you've got to allow the illusion of the jingle.
I thought you did the jingle live.
No, I don't do the jingle live.
I think you should do it live.
Okay, I'll do it live in future. It's happened now.
Mailbag.
That's not how it goes.
Mailbag.
Ding dong.
Mailbag.
Like See, that's fine. You didn't need any editing. What's going on? We should just put this podcast out live. Just put it out on Twitch. It should be fine.
Anyway, this week we've received a whole roast hog full of pedals in the post. I don't know what I'm going
for
there.
About.
We've got a load of pedals. Loads of stuff has turned up in the post, which is absolutely wonderful. Everyone's had a chance to try out the stuff except for Matthew.
Yes.
He lives in that London, doesn't he?
He lives in that London. But we've all been checking out the pedals, and there's been some really cool stuff. I think the thing that that titillated the boys the most was the Old Blood Noise Endeavours Reva.
Or Reva.
Or Reva.
We don't know how to pronounce it.
No.
I'm guessing it's Reva because it's a reverb. But Reva is the same forwards as it is backwards. And as it is a
palindrome.
Reverse reverb.
Right. Reva.
Palindrome.
Weren't they the bad guys in Firefly?
No, they were the bad guys in Mass Effect. And maybe Firefly. Okay. It's really good. For someone who like doesn't really care about reverb pedals anymore because I've got a Strymon Flint, this is really, really good. I likened it to have you watched the third season of Twin Peaks? If you have, you'll very much like this pedal because
it's very soundscape.
Pretty much
it?
All of oh, the music great. In that sounds exactly like this.
Well, it's a few things in one because it's a reverb and a reverse, and there's a delay in there.
Yeah.
And it has a latching element to the pedal, a second foot switch that you can latch to remove your dry signal in
yes.
the chain, which is fantastic when you've got like the reverse. Sort of delayed reverb things going on.
What I was enjoying doing with it was like doing arpeggios, like repeated arpeggios of like the same chord over and over again, and then like on the third time round or something, holding down the reverse, so you got like one like messed up little section, and then you go back into the arpeggio that you were doing. It sounds super lush. There is a control on there called Field, which. Mm. I guess adjust the kind of lushness of it.
We referred to it as bloom.
Yes,
I believe. The bloom of the reverb.
I think it's better if you just leave it all the way up.
Yes, blooming neck. Blooming that sounds
heck.
Good.
Yeah, that's exactly
the more bloom, the more blooming neck.
Yeah, that's right.
I liked it a lot, and for someone who's pretty cynical about kind of soundscapey, you know, all the nonsense that you like, this pedal actually is really, really nice.
Yeah, Jay Cross, you actually requested this one over.
I wanted to give it a go. I'm not quite as cynical as Mark is, but I do find that it sometimes feels like we're kind of at saturation point with. I guess these kind of big expansive reverb pedals.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's so many coming out.
This is it. I've heard so many good ones. It's almost hard to get excited
totally,
about a new
totally.
One.
But Old Blood, great company, and they do some really cool weird stuff, and I was really keen to hear it. And I thought it sounded fantastic. Really, really good.
Yeah.
And after you stopped showing me all the extremely forcing all these really weird sounds on me, I just kind of turned everything down, and it was just like, it just sounded good again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a lot more than you'd get from a reverb tank.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's just different and massive, and yeah, it sounded great. Really cool.
What is that? Because there's modulation on the tails as well as it being reverb, as well as it being delay, as well as there being a reverse on this. So there's tons of stuff, and that's great because that's actually a pedal that both of us were able to use. Like, I was maxing out the modulation and making those weird sort of space noises, and then you can also use it really conventionally and it sounds great and really lush.
Yeah,
and thick.
Yeah,
a totally cool pedal. We were super impressed with that. Another super weird one that we received was the Keeley Synth 1, which is one of the, I think, four pedals that were released at the start of this year by Keeley. The Synth 1, probably the weirdest pedal. Matt, you are absolutely going to love this pedal.
I tried it very, 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 very briefly at NAMM. The guy described it as part slow gear and then part fuzz.
Yeah.
But then it's obviously got some sort of filter in it as well.
Yeah, that's
right.
And you can choose the waveform that it's
Yeah, that sounds cool. And I like the switch for the waveform.
There's a big, like a chunky sort of like almost 80s, kind of light switch sort of, I don't know, like game controller.
It's like a light switch. When something's described on a website as a single note synth fuzz, reverse attack and swell, and a band pass filter, I'm like, cool.
I actually would play down the fuzz aspect of it because I would never describe it as a fuzz.
No.
It's like a monosynth, basically.
It sounded like a synthesizer, but the tracking was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like when I was playing it at home, my girlfriend came in because her synthesizers are in the music room as well, and she came in and she was like, "Oh, I thought you were playing a
She's
playing
like,
one
what
of the synths."
Don't touch my synth,
yeah, exactly.
You idiot.
She was like that, but it's
bad enough that I have to live with you.
but the thing is like the Synth 9 and all of those things from Electro Harmonix were very good, but at no point did they ever not sound like you were trying to make a guitar sound like a synthesizer.
Yeah.
Whereas this was, it was so wonderful and perfect. And yes, it can do that swell thing. You can, because you've got the attack that you can change, and for some
so
of the sounds
you,
it sounds
if you
really
turn
good.
All that way down to zero,
yeah,
is there like it's just instant, there's no like,
well, you can, if you turn it's more in. It's the other way around, so it's attack, so if you turn the attack on full, then it's like an immediate thing, so you can use it a bit more conventionally.
Right.
But like a little bit of swell on there, I found sounded really, really good. And there's like a switch called the chaos switch, and then you get three sounds on that light switch with the switch in each position, so six different synth tones in total, and they're all very, very different. and all tracked.
Yeah, they were all really, really different.
Yeah, there's kind of something for everyone.
Yeah,
in there,
huge range of sounds.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll send it down. I'd be interested to give it a go, especially with an expression pedal plugged
pedal.
In. I think it'd be
pedal.
Pedal.
Yeah, it was super cool. On the more conventional, well, here we are, the most conventional pedal we've received, but the least conventional name, and my favourite named pedal that should get an award in this year's Gear of the Year.
Best name.
Just for best name.
Can you get it without, can you read it without looking at it?
No, because I don't want to mess it up.
Okay.
This is the Animal Pedals. Vintage van driving is very fun.
It's not.
What?
You've already messed it up.
What?
You messed up the first word.
Animal pedals.
It's animals pedal.
He's checking.
Oh my goodness,
it's animals pedal.
Animals pedal.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's animals pedal, vintage van driving.
The company is Animals Pedal.
Oh, that's great. Even that's good. Even that's good. Yeah, the Animals Pedal vintage van driving is very fun, which is a drive cum boost with a little toggle so you can switch between the drive or the boost function, and then it's like a conventional volume, tone and drive setting. We found very much that different things worked differently for depending on what we were using, because Mark and Jay, you tried this out through Jay's Princeton using Jay's Mustang.
Yeah, two very kind of bright things, and actually the boost on the vintage van driving is very fun. Was too bright.
It's too bright. Too way like it was just. I appreciate that we're using
a Mustang,
is already a very very bright combo.
Whereas when I was using it, I was running a Gibson ES-175 into a
with Boss. The tone control turned off.
I only used the bridge pickup on that guitar,
and I was playing it under the duvet just to deaden it even more.
Well, it does have very very dead strings on there actually, but, boom, pretty much. But I was playing the ES-175 going into a Boss Katana, and for me, it like gave using the boost setting just gave everything loads of depth and just made it like gave it like some brightness that you know, just depth when you feel like it's added an extra layer of stuff there that wasn't there before, and I really liked it for that. I thought it gave it some real character, which was very nice. Whereas as we said, it was a bit too trebly with the Mustang and a Princeton, but of course different things work differently. The overdrive, however, was
really good.
Yeah,
really good. Kind of reminds me of like a very good. And I'm not saying this. The original pedal is bad, but the just the Boss overdrive, you know, like a real kind of quintessential overdrive sound.
Yeah, not too much, not too transparent either.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. I really liked it. I was kind of like, I was just doing kind of like garagey rock riffs on the Mustang into the Princeton, and that pedal sounded really good for it. I think if you wanted to add something to your sound that was like, yeah, like a.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
A boutique version of that kind of classic Boss overdrive, this wouldn't be too far off.
Yeah,
it was. I like it a lot.
I've got a feeling this brand, I'm just on their website, Animals Pedal, that I think it's the same guy that actually started One Control.
It is.
Yeah, because I remember they were the same distributor.
That explains why it came in a One Control box.
That would explain. Yeah, we met him at Summer NAMM when we were having
we met the
Canadian distributor.
Yeah, and I was just actually the history on the website, and they were like, we released the One Control, and then it was like, we released the first major Animals pedal. Because I actually saw these in Japan when I was out there about a year and a half ago, and I was like, these are so weird.
Do you
they're really reasonably priced as well. Not like expensive in any way.
Do you want to hear some of the other names?
Go on, Mark. Tell us some of the other names.
Okay, so on the more kind of conservative side of things, you've got the Relaxing Walrus Delay.
Yeah.
The Surfing Bear Overdrive.
That isn't the name of it. That isn't what that's not an overdrive.
Surfing
pedal.
Bear Overdrive.
No, that should be a chorus or something.
A chorus.
You've got the 1927 Home Run King Compressor.
Oh, that's so good.
The Bath Time Reverb.
Right.
The I Was a Wolf in the Forest Distortion.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tioga Road Cycling Distortion.
That's those are so some of the conservative good. Ones.
No, that's the weird
ones.
Oh,
okay. Oh, that's a shame.
That's so good. I loved every single one of those. The I Was a Wolf in a Forest is my favourite.
The Tioga Road Cycling Distortion has got a picture of a bear riding a bike up a hill on the front of the pedal.
That is even better.
I love this company. So good.
That is amazing. Now, then we got a load more things from two separate companies. First off, we should talk about the Hot Tone Ampero.
Yes.
Which is Hot Tone's
Hot
One
submission to the world of Helix and Headrush, and I'm sure Muir did one at one point.
I actually am reading this, and one of their technology names is so close to the technology name that I put on one of our products. I'm like, that is unbelievable. I'm reading it. I'm like, there is no way they thought of that off the top of their head.
What is it?
So it's a multi-effects, obviously based around Helix, GT1000, all of those units. So GT1000, when it's released, had a new IR modeling technology called Augmented Impulse Response Dynamics, and they have one called FIRE, Field Impulse Response Enhancement. I'm like, that is...
I mean, to be fair, it's only impulse response, and that's quite a common term.
Yeah, but I think they're stealing some of that. I think they're stealing some of my ideas.
I tell you what, Matt.
I think my house is wiretapped to Hot Tone.
I tell you what, if you want to talk about usable interfaces, then then I would say that the Hot Tone Ampero has an awful lot of companies absolutely pegged.
How much is the Ampero?
I'm not sure. So
They're £349.
Okay, fine.
It has by far the best touchscreen out of any of these.
So this is
products.
This is the point. It's so the pedal itself is a really well built sort of black aluminium with sort of gold, sort of other bits on it, and the screen display is black and gold as well. But the screen display, so it's not full color, but it's black and gold, and it does actually use other colors in
it. Yeah, there's other colors there,
but predominantly black and gold. And then it's also touchscreen, but it has physical rotaries as well. So it's utilizing the same sort of thing that that Headrush did, but without adding a touchscreen on there that's the size of a small TV. It's a much more functional little touchscreen where you have the option to use it, or you can use the rotaries to navigate around as well. They've added the sort of joystick feature, from the Helix and everything. And you can bank up and down. It has four foot switches, three rotary controls that you can control sort of live things on any of the effects that you're on. And the four rotary controls divvy up so you can hit two together to bank up and bank down between presets. You have one that you can hold to assign to tap tempo at any given time, one that you hold for a tuner, and then in each bank, the first three foot switches will be your three, whatever the three patches are that you've allocated there. The fourth one, for each of those individual patches, becomes an effect that you can turn on and off within that patch, or you could assign it to a tap tempo, or you could assign it to a looper. It also has a drum machine on there, which now I said about the drum machine, and Mark Packham was like, oh, I automatically don't like anything that's got a drum machine built in. But this is a great idea, because this is we're talking about an all-in-one amp solution for 300 and something quid. It's also a rehearsal tool.
I just every product that has a drum machine in has been bad.
Sure. What about the Digitech Trio? What about the Vox Apache that had it built into the actual guitar?
And I said about this, what about the Jam-Man Stereo, the all-time best looper?
The all-time best looper.
The Jam-Man Stereo. The four-button Jam-Man. Yeah, it was really
good. We can move on now. I just needed to dwell on that for a minute.
Just let people think about that one. That's fine. Just think about what he said.
Okay.
I just think don't put a drum machine on guitar products.
But I like the drum machine's like super accessible, and they've got like a ton of easily accessible beats and the BPMs there that you can either sort of tap tempo in or you can.
That's what I do. I need beats and BPMs.
Sure, yeah, of course. But anyway, it's there as a writing tool. But I was like, man, this is way less clunky. Like loads of the budget ones do away with a lot of the, especially when they try and downsize it and only have a few switches. They do away with kind of the functionality of those sorts of things. Because when you're talking about an all-in-one solution, that's so much stuff that you're talking about. You're talking about every patch controlling an amp head, a cab, four or five effects, and, you know, flicking between them. That's so much stuff. And when you don't have the foot switches or the buttons or a decent-sized screen to sort of affect all of those things, it can be really, really tricky. It's certainly where I felt that the Moore fell down. Like, I know it wasn't its purpose. The GT1 is very much, you know, it's designed as sort of a tool for home, but certainly the editing of each of the sounds becomes harder because there's less access to rotary controls and buttons and things like that. Whereas I felt that the Ampera dealt with it really, really well. And it has the diddiest little expression pedal.
It's so small. It's an expression pedal for ants.
Is it the same expression pedal that's on the Soul series?
Yes, like it's that size, stuff. Yeah.
It runs on 18 volt, which I find kind of weird, but in a way, kind of good, because they're saying, obviously, for increased headroom, and obviously we quite often talk about drives and compressors and stuff that run on 18 volts.
It comes with its own power supply, which, again, I thought was initially weird. But, yeah, I think for something like this, you're not going to put it on a pedal board with loads of other stuff using one spot or something, are you? So I'm going to take it home tonight and try it out. I've got not much to do this week, so I'm going to give the Ampero a good road test and I'll report back next week.
It looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, for something that's not a lot of money, you know, we've come quite away from, like, Zoom G1s or whatever. It looks very, very well built. I'm excited to give it a proper test.
Absolutely. Now, we also received a load of stuff from a company that we mentioned a few weeks ago, Valiton, and we spoke about them on the Patreon episode of the podcast. We've now received a load of that stuff. However, there's so much stuff, and we're so far through the podcast, and there's some news bits that I want to talk about that I think we should talk about the Valiton stuff next week, and then we can talk about it rather than glossing over it, as I think we would do now.
Well, because you've only brought
one
here.
I only brought one of the things. So we've received, we've got the Dapper Indie, which is their complete fly rig. We've got the Dapper Looper. We've got the MDR, which is their modulation, delay, and reverb all-in-one teeny tiny little three-button fly rig. And also my favourite, we've got the Valiton Tar Asphalt, which is like a 20 watt solid state guitar amp, guitar head, you know. So it's which is a really sort of interesting, odd idea. So we'll try out all of those things by next week, and we'll talk about them in a little bit more detail. We should do some news. News. So first up on the news, Matt Knight, tell me about G&L.
Yeah, so G&L, the brand that's kind of on the way back, I guess, in a way. They sort of disappeared for a while, but they're now sort of making a fresh appearance in a lot of stores. And I believe we've talked about this body shape before. This is the Tahini.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it? Tahini V12.
Tahini?
Tahini.
Yeah, yeah.
Tzatziki is their... Jazz Master,
Olay.
J Master, offset style guitar.
What is the official non-official word for a Jazz Master?
J style,
offset, J style,
J cross.
Listen, J-style. Like, don't go down the route of J style. You just can't handle it, mate. You can't handle it.
The J style is too strong.
You can't handle it.
Okay, it's an offset surf style guitar.
Yeah, that comes in at two brand new colours, Sunburst and Gold.
Gold!
With a Caribbean rosewood fingerboard. Faro Gold and Old School Tobacco Sunburst over Akume. And the Faro Gold is over Basswood.
Rocking the Basswood. Akume?
Yeah.
I like a bit of Akume.
Super light, if I remember rightly. Is that right with Akume?
I don't remember Akume being especially light. My only experience with Akume is last year or the year before, Fender did a limited run of jazz basses and P basses that came scratch plateless, and they were Akume, very 80s looking things. And it's got that very much, the wood is sort of a mid-coloured kind of mahogany-esque, but with a sort of more an ash-style grain. Reminded me a bit of the Tom Quayle wood.
Right.
Matty, we had some, when we were at GAC, we had some, do you remember those Telecasters that were...
The super light ones?
No, those were Empress Maple.
That was the Empress, yes.
That was what those were. No, the Akume ones that had...
Oh, I remember the Empress Maple.
That was a fantastic guitar.
That was a great
one
guitar.
Of the first things I did when I started a Fender was look to see if there were still any anywhere. The blonde one, because it was blonde and Honeyburst, right. And the blonde one was just absolutely amazing. It was so light. And actually, I love that guitar so much that someone... I can't remember how it came about. I think maybe it was someone who listened to the podcast who bought one from GAC, came in and was like, I've got mine and, you know, it's, to be honest with you, it's a bit too light for me. So if you want to make me an offer, but he had the Honeyburst and I really want... Anyway, that aside, the Akume guitars that we had in at GAC, Matty, were the double bound sparkle finish custom shops.
Yes, yes. There was
blue, there was two blue sparkles and a gold sparkle, and the gold sparkle and one of the blues had Bigsby's, and they were absolutely unbelievable guitars, absolutely incredible, and they were Akume.
I think that guitar was the first guitar I ever tried a Strymon Deco through.
Oh, there we go. That's a story for just me and Matt. Nobody else sort of really
nice.
Needed
I,
to.
I enjoyed it.
But they were cool guitars. But anyway, so yeah, we've got these J-style Dahini V12s from G&L. The main thing with these is they feature the MFD guitar humbuckers, which was one of the last parts of sort of Leo Fender's technical research with brothers Dave and Johnny McLaren to basically make what he called an end-to-end humbucker that sounded amazing in both series humbucking, parallel humbucking, and single coil modes. So the guitar itself has quite a few switches. It has a standard toggle switch for neck, mid, both, and bridge. But then you also have two mini switches that then switch between two different types of humbucking and single coil for each one of those humbuckers. So you can get like a massive array of tones just from a few switches. And then you also have a Jazzmaster style trem arm, but on a trem system that looks a bit like a high-end Wilkinson Strat trem.
Yeah, it's quite large, isn't it? It's quite oversized, the bridge
itself.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why. Well, the bridge I can sort of see. It's the trem arm, I think, is kind of weird. I guess that's because they're going for a particular look. But yeah, overall, I think it's quite a cool looking guitar. I must admit, the gold to me looks better than Tobacco Sunburst. Never been a massive fan of that kind of slightly washed out tobacco. Finish, but I think I'd be interested to try the pickups. I'd be interested to see like the sort of different combinations you can get out of that as well. And one piece aluminium control plate, which I also think
really?
Is a rather
oh that's
cool
really
touch.
Cool. They're quite a price tag on these G&Ls.
They are. Let me have a look. Yeah, $16.99 or $17.99. Yeah, dollars. Though.
Yeah, dollars. USDs.
Which is probably about 16.59 and 17.59. but these look cool guitars. I think they're a nice alternative choice if you didn't want to go down the sort of Fender route. But definitely something that comes with a few more pickup options. I guess the closest in terms of pickup options might be, I want to say, the Johnny Marr Jaguar.
Johnny Marr Jag is just a four-way.
Is it just a four-way? Yeah. Oh, yes, the Baja Telly. Then I'm thinking potentially of the classic player Jazz Masters with the two humbuckers.
Yes, you are.
Are they still made?
Yep, they are.
They are, and they've got the roller controls that go between.
They've got proper coil taps as opposed to coil splits, which people often call coil taps, but are not coil taps. They're coil splits.
Two very different
things. But yes, in the classic player Jazz Masters, classic player Jaguar HH, they are, yeah, they've got the rolly, the thumb wheels.
I like a thumb wheel.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, big fan. It's good. You don't knock it accidentally, you know. It makes sense.
Not until you tried it, anyway.
Mark Packham.
Hello. Well, I was just thinking, how much time have we got left on the podcast?
We've got enough time.
Okay, well, I want to tell you about a giant knob. And not you, Joe Branton. I want to talk about the Music Man Joe Dart signature, which features a giant knob. So this is the signature model for Wolfpack Joe Dart, who has collaborated with Ernie Ball on a new Music Man bass.
He's always playing a 60s... jazz bass.
Okay. Well, this isn't
until
that.
Until recently. No, but he was very heavily geared towards the bridge pickup on that.
Right,
on that
fine.
Bass. So this isn't a surprising sort of
instrument. So what they've done is basically stripped everything off of a... I guess it's a... It's not... Is it a Stingray body?
It looks like a Sterling body.
Yeah,
to
I think it's a Sterling body. They've basically stripped everything back, and you've just got basically, like, I guess it's an Ash body, maybe an Alder body. Hard to tell.
No, I think it's Ash, mate.
Yeah, don't have that in the spec, which is really annoying. Flame Maple neck, Flame Maple fingerboard, and yeah, so there's nothing else on the body at all apart from the pickup. And what's special about this is the pickup is custom designed passive Music Man pickup.
Right.
So there's no active circuit in this bass.
No, he has a very sort of old school bass.
Yeah,
tone.
Yeah, yeah. So passive humbucker designed by Joe Dart and his bandmate Jack Stratton. And the only other thing on the front of the bass is the aforementioned giant knob. So just a volume control.
It's very large.
It's an oversized. It's nearly as big as the diameter or circumference?
Yeah, it's quite girthy.
What's all the way across the circle?
It's girth.
Diameter is girth. All the way across. Circumference is around.
What's the one that's halfway across?
Radius. Radius, diameter, a radius so is half the diameter.
The diameter is nearly as wide as that of the pickup itself, which is
as girthy
bonkers.
As the pickup
it's
is deep.
Incredibly
girthy.
Are
you sure? Have you seen... Because the only thing I've seen about this bass is the picture of it sitting there motionless. So it could well be, it will. I know, you're showing me a picture of it now, but I've not seen anybody playing it. It could well be that that's a normal size knob and the bass is really small. I reckon that's what it is, personally.
Potentially.
I'm
going to
have
case.
A look now. There's, in fact, a video right here of someone playing.
I tell you what,
I like it. I think it's a great looking bass.
Me too. The only downside is they're only going to make the initial run. Is only be 50 units.
Well, no one listens to Wolfpack anyway, so that's not.
And
right.
I'm not sure about that.
They're only for sale on their website, which is interesting.
$2,000. There's only 50 initially, and the neck plate will be engraved with first 50. So sounds like they're doing a short run to gauge interest, and then if it takes off, I guess they'll do more.
I'd be interested to see if more bands do this sort of thing.
What, limited run instruments?
Yeah, but also just selling stuff direct through their own website.
Well,
seeing as
no one's making money from music anymore, it seems like a smart idea.
Well, in all seriousness, yes. I mean, that is kind of the thing.
No,
like,
merch is the last bastion of...
But, you know, Joe Bonamassa did it with those high-powered twins. Well, he had a bunch of high-powered Fender twins.
Yeah.
Made, and I think there was 50 of them, and they were all, maybe it was even less than that, but they were only available through his website.
Right.
And Gene Simmons do? Oh no, those were old basses, weren't they?
No, he gets a different bass made for every gig, and then can buy that one. That
right,
he's played
okay,
at
the so
gig.
that's slightly different, but yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting concept, and I'm keen to see whether more people pick this sort of thing up.
For sure. I'm sorry to grace the listener with more bass, but the last...
It's been a bass-heavy week.
It's been a bass-heavy week. The last piece of news...
Did you just laugh at your own joke? Because
yes, I did.
None of the rest of us did.
No.
Well, that's why I thought I ought.
Okay, right, okay.
Anyway, the last piece of news is also bass, and it comes from Eastwood. Eastwood, who have made about a million Warren Ellis signature guitars, mandolins, mandocellos, tenor guitars, have added to that with the only string instrument left to add to the Warren Ellis signature line, the bass guitar. So the Warren Ellis body shape was always kind of a Mustang. It has a bit of an angled back headstock, but it's always a color-matched headstock. But all in all, it's essentially always a Mustang, you know, whether it's as a tenor guitar or whether it's as a mandocello, always a Mustang. They've introduced a bass guitar, and it has like almost a bladed guitar single coil as the pickup in the middle of the body. And they actually they're actually promoting this instrument as being like, yeah, run this through a guitar amp and a load of effects, because that's what Warren Ellis does. So they're kind of saying, well, this is sort of a halfway house. They do say, you know, it sounds great as a bass as well. Run it through a bass amp if you want. Use it as a bass. But they're saying, look, this gives you loads of other tonal options. Works great with effects, as basses tend to do. And, you know, you can just get that sort of cool, sort of low-end quality, kind of as a baritone tenor guitar, sort of.
Well, they actually make a baritone tenor. Because I was actually looking on their website, their collection, I will just quickly, so their collection is, so they make a signature tenor, they make the same with two pickups, they do a six string, they do a mandocello, they do the mandocello left-handed, they do a mandostang, they do both signatures left-handed with two pickups, they make a tenor baritone, which they also do left-handed, and now they also make the bass, which also comes in left-handed.
Yes, and they're doing the bass in three finishes, in a white, a sort of a dark cherry, and a through cherry, and a black, all with torque guards. They look great, all with matching headstocks. I mean, I think these look absolutely brilliant.
I want one.
Yeah,
I think one.
I think they're fantastic. Eastwood obviously make great guitars at sort of really good prices, but this is a really cool, interesting guitar. My only thing with Eastwood, which is always my problem with Eastwood, is the product photography on their website. And in their press release for this, they've got the bass on a lovely orange background, which I'm not sure if it's been cut out or not. I don't think so. But you can see the reflection of the light fitting in the
nice.
in the instrument, and it's just some, like, it's obviously just a warehouse. It's just like a warehouse light fitting.
Have we ever done an actual episode on the range of instruments they have? Because I think it would make a great episode to potentially recap some of the basses that they're making, like the EEB1.
Yeah. I think we have touched on them before, but we might well do that for our Patreon episode this week. Then we'll go through all the cool Eastwood stuff.
Oh, we can talk about the Devo B Stiff bass.
I want to talk about the Pocket Bass, which is a recreation of something that. I've forgotten his name. Doesn't matter, does it? Yeah, whatever. it doesn't matter. But there's the Pocket Bass, which is an absolutely wonderful instrument.
You can get there.
What, can I get it?
The
fella who used it for writing. It was
William Shakespeare. Philip K. Dick.
The times they are a-changing. Bob Dylan, there we go. Yeah.
Oh, my
Bob...
God.
I just forgot Bob Dylan's name for a minute, okay?
He's a poet laureate. It's not
I
that
got
far
flustered.
Away.
Anyway, he, yes.
Poet laureate? Is that what he won? No, it was Nobel Peace Prize for writing or something, wasn't it?
I mean, I loved his Christmas album.
Dude, that's
Must
what,
be Santa.
That is a, I tell you what, that is a great song. A great
I remember
song.
that year in the shop when that was literally played every possible moment.
It is an absolutely fantastic Christmas song.
It's a great Christmas song. Anyway, that does pretty much bring us to a time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. It looks like we're going to be continuing over on the Patreon episode, where this week we'll be covering the Eastwood line, with focus on some of their weirder and wackier things, and some focus on the basses. We'll also be doing our
Hall of Fame
episode, where
I literally haven't got anything yet.
Mark,
I still need to think about it.
It is Mark Packham's choice this week.
I still need to think about it.
Despite being the person that came up with this series, and then I made a document.
I knew this
that
would happen.
Tells you when
I told you this
your
would
week is coming up, and he's still forgotten. But anyway, we'll be heading over to the Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode, plus additional series like the Hall of Fame, and $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out in one breath by me.
Oh, it's a shame we haven't got anything to plug the drum machine of the Ampera.
Well, just do a Bob Dylan classic.
I'm going to do the drum machine from the Ampera.
Okay.
Is that what it sounds like?
I don't know.
Adam Royce, Chris, Jake, Scott Moore, Robert Cousins, Rob Crew, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Simon Hinch, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emery James Baker, Juan Carrier, Aaron Servant, Blake Wyland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lucet, Hans Arms, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Medley, Steve Markle, DJ Cross, Michael McGrory, Carlos Mantra, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Thomas, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Bill Gravett, Will Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Stuart Tate, Sean Hubble, Christopher Wolford, Cameron Son, and thank you, Scott, for adding your last name to the thing, but I forgot to write it.
That was close.
Very good.
That was close.
I didn't think that was very good. Can you give it another go?
Really?
He might die.
Okay, fine.
Don't ever do it again.
Oh, okay. Right. Anyway, but that leads us to the end of the podcast. That's everything we're going to do. So we'll see you over on the Patreon. Farewell.
Bye.
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 Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.